Chapter 6. From a distance, it had looked like a standard-issue bulk cruiser. Old, slow, minimally armed, with very little going for it in a fight except its size. But as with so very much of warfare, appearances in this case turned out to be deceiving. And if Grand Admiral Thrawn hadn't been on the Chimera's bridge, Pelion had to admit that he might have been caught a bit by surprise. But Thrawn had been on the bridge, and had recognized immediately the unlikelihood that the rebellion strategists would have put such an important convoy under the protection of such a weak ship. And so, when the bulk cruiser's bay suddenly erupted with three full squadrons of A-wing starfighters, the Chimera's TIE interceptors were already in space and swarming to the attack. "Interesting tactic," Thrawn commented, as the gap between the Chimera and the rebel convoy began to sparkle with laser flashes. "If not especially innovative. The idea of converting bulk cruisers to starfighter carriers was first proposed over 20 years ago."
"I don't recall it ever being implemented,"
Pelion said, feeling a twinge of uneasiness as he eyed the tactical displays. A-wings were faster even than those cursed X-wings, and he wasn't at all sure how well his TIE interceptors would handle them.
"Excellent fighters, A-wings," Thrawn said, as if reading Pelion's thoughts. "Not without their limitations, though. Particularly here. High-speed craft like that are far more suited to hit-and-fade operations than to escort duty. Forcing them to remain near a convoy largely neutralizes their speed advantage." He cocked a blue-black eyebrow at Pelion. "Perhaps we're seeing the result of Admiral Ackbar's removal as Supreme Commander."
"Perhaps."
The TIE interceptors did indeed seem to be holding their own against the A-wings, and the Chimera itself was certainly having no trouble with the bulk cruiser. Beyond the battlefront, the rest of the convoy was trying to huddle together, as if that would do them any good.
"Ackbar's people are still in charge, though, obviously."
"We've been over this territory already, Captain," Thrawn said, his voice cooling slightly. "Planting a vacuum-tight collection of evidence against Ackbar would have ruined him far too quickly. The more subtle attack will still neutralize him, but it will also send ripples of uncertainty and confusion through the rebellion's entire political system. At the very least, it will distract and weaken them just at the moment when we'll be launching the Mount Tantis campaign. At its best, it could split the entire alliance apart." He smiled. "Ackbar himself is replaceable, Captain. The delicate political balance the rebellion has created for itself is not."
"I understand all that, Admiral,"
Pelion growled.
"My concern is with your assumption that that Bothan on the Council can be relied upon to push things so close to your theoretical breakup point."
"Oh, he'll push all right,"
Thrawn said, his smile turning sardonic as he gazed out at the battle blazing on around the enemy convoy.
"I've spent many hours studying Bothan art, Captain, and I understand the species quite well. There's no doubt at all that Counselor Phalia will play his part beautifully. As beautifully as if we were pulling his strings directly."
He tapped a key on his board.
"Starboard batteries. One of the frigates in the convoy is easing into attack position. Assume it's an armed backup and treat it accordingly. Squadrons A2 and A3, move to protect that flank until the frigate has been neutralized."
The batteries and TIE wing commander acknowledged, and some of the turbo laser fire began to track on the frigate.
"And what happens if Phalia wins?"
Pelion persisted.
"Quickly, I mean, before all this political confusion has a chance to set in. By your own analysis of the species, any Bothan who's risen as high as Phalia has would have to be highly intelligent."
"Intelligent, yes, but not necessarily in any way that's dangerous to us," Thrawn said. "He'd have to be a survivor, certainly, but that kind of verbal skill doesn't necessarily translate into military competence."
He shrugged.
"Actually, a victory by Phalia would merely prolong the whole awkward situation for the enemy. Given the kind of support Phalia's been cultivating among the rebellion military, The politicians would have to go through another polarizing struggle when they realized their mistake and tried to replace him.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, suppressing a sigh. It was the kind of tangled subtlety that he'd never really felt comfortable with. He just hoped the Grand Admiral was right about the potential gains. It would be a shame for intelligence to have engineered such a brilliantly successful bank job and then not get anything of real value out of it.
Trust me, Captain, Thrawn said into his unspoken worries. I dare say the wasting of political effort has already begun, in fact. Akbar's staunchest allies would hardly have left Coruscant at this critical point unless they were desperately searching for evidence to clear him.
Pelion frowned at him.
Are you saying that Solo and Organa Solo are headed for the Palani system?
Solo only, I think, Thrawn corrected thoughtfully. Organa Solo and the Wookiee are most likely still trying to find a place to hide from our Nogri. But Solo will be going to Palani, firmly convinced by intelligence's electronic sleight of hand that the trail leads through that system, which is why the Death's Head is on its way there right now.
I see,
Pelion murmured. He'd noticed that order on the daily log, and had wondered why Thrawn was pulling one of their best Imperial Star Destroyers off battle duty.
I hope it will be equal to the task. Solo and Skywalker have both proved hard to trap in the past.
I don't believe Skywalker is going to Palani, Thrawn told him, his face settling into a somewhat sour expression. Our esteemed Jedi Master apparently called it correctly. Skywalker has decided to pay a visit to Jomark.
Pelion stared at him.
Are you sure, Admiral? I haven't seen anything from intelligence to that effect.
The information wasn't from intelligence, Thrawn said. It came from Delta Source.
Ah,
Pelion said, feeling his own expression go a little sour. The Chimera's intelligence section had been nagging him for months now to find out what exactly this Delta Source was that seemed to feed such clear and precise information to the Grand Admiral from the very heart of the Imperial Palace. So far, all Thrawn would say was that Delta Source was firmly established and that the information gained through it should be treated as absolutely reliable. Intelligence hadn't been able to figure out whether Delta Source was a person, a droid, or some exotic recording system that was somehow able to elude the Rebellion's hourly counterintelligence sweeps of the palace. It irritated them to no end, and Pelion had to admit he didn't like much being kept in the dark about it either. But Thrawn had personally activated Delta Source, and long years of unwritten protocol in such matters gave him the right to keep the contact confidential if he chose.
I'm sure Sabaoth will be pleased to hear it,
he said.
I presume you'll want to give him the news yourself.
He thought he'd hidden his irritation with Sabaoth reasonably well. Apparently he'd thought wrong.
You're still upset about T'Nab, Thrawn said, turning to gaze out at the battle. It wasn't a question.
Yes, sir, I am,
Pelion said stiffly.
I've been over the records again, and there's only one possible conclusion. Sabaoth deliberately went beyond the battle plan Captain Aben had laid out. Went beyond it to the point of disobeying a direct order. I don't care who Sabaoth is or whether he felt justified or not. What he did constitutes mutiny.
It did indeed, Thrawn agreed calmly. Shall I throw him out of the Imperial service altogether, or simply demote him in rank?
Pelion glared at the other.
I'm serious, Admiral.
So am I, Captain, Thrawn countered, his voice abruptly cold. You know full well what's at stake here. We need to utilize every weapon at our disposal if we're to defeat the Rebellion.
Sabaoth's ability to enhance coordination and battle efficiency between our forces is one of those weapons. And if he can't handle proper military discipline and protocol, then we bend the rules for him.
And what happens when we've bent the rules so far that they come around and stab us in the back?
Pelion demanded.
He ignored a direct order at T'Nab. Maybe next time it'll be two orders, then three, then four, until finally he's doing what he damn well pleases and ablazes with the Empire. What's to stop him?
Initially, the Isle of Mari,
Thrawn said, gesturing at the odd-looking tubular framework scattered around the bridge, each with an elongated furry creature wrapped around it, each of them creating a bubble in the Force where none of Savioth's Jedi tricks would work.
That's what they're here for, after all.
That's all well and good, Pelion said. But in the long run...
In the long run, I will stop him.
Thrawn cut him off, touching his board.
Squadron C-3, watch your Port Zenith flank. There's a blister on that frigate that could be a cluster trap.
The commander acknowledged, the TIE interceptors veering away in response. A second later, half a heartbeat too late, the blister abruptly exploded, sending a withering hail of concussion grenades outward in all directions. The rearmost of the TIE interceptors was caught by the edge of the fiery flower, shattering in a brilliant secondary explosion. The rest, out of range, escaped the booby trap unharmed.
Thrawn turned his glowing eyes on Pelion. I understand your concerns, Captain, he said quietly. What you fail to grasp, what you've always failed to grasp, is that a man with Sabaoth's mental and emotional instabilities can never be a threat to us. Yes, he has a great deal of power, and at any given moment he could certainly do considerable damage to our people and equipment. But by his very nature, he's unable to use that power for any length of time. Concentration, focus, long-term thinking. Those are the qualities that separate a warrior from a mere flailing fighter. And they're qualities Sabaoth will never possess.
Pelion nodded heavily. He still wasn't convinced, but there was clearly no use in arguing the point further. Not now, anyway.
Yes, sir.
He hesitated.
Sabaoth will also want to know about Organa Solo.
Thrawn's eyes glittered, but the annoyance, Pelion knew, wasn't directed at him.
You will tell Master Sabaoth that I've decided to allow the Nogri one last chance to find and capture her.
When we've finished here, I'll be taking that message to them. Personally. Pelion glanced back at the entrance to the bridge, where the Nogri bodyguard Rook stood his usual silent vigil.
You're calling a convocate of the Nogri commandos?
He asked, suppressing a shiver. He'd been to one such mass meeting once, and facing a whole roomful of those quiet, gray-skinned killers was not an experience he was anxious to repeat.
I think matters have gone beyond simply calling a convocate, Thrawn said coldly. You'll instruct navigation to prepare a course from the rendezvous point to the Honegger system. The entire Nogri populace, I think, needs to be reminded of who it is they serve.
He shifted his glare out the viewport at the battle and tapped his board.
TIE Command, recall all fighters to the ship, he ordered. Navigation. Begin calculations for a return to the rendezvous point.
Pelion frowned out the viewport. The modified bulk cruiser and backup frigate were pretty much dead where they lay, but the convoy itself was largely undamaged.
We're letting them go.
There's no need to destroy them, Thrawn said. Stripping them of their defense is an adequate object lesson for the moment.
He tapped a key, and a tactical hollow of this section of the galaxy appeared between their two stations. Blue lines marked the Rebellion's main trade routes. Those sheathed in red marked ones the Imperial forces had hit in the past month.
There's more to these attacks than simple harassment, Captain. Once this group has told their story, all future convoys from Sarka will demand upgraded protection. Enough such attacks, and the Rebellion will face the choice of either tying up large numbers of its ships with escort duty, or effectively abandoning cargo shipment through these border sectors. Either way, it will put them at a serious disadvantage when we launch the Mount Tantis campaign. He smiled grimly.
Economics and psychology, Captain. For now, the more civilian survivors there are to spread the tale of Imperial power, the better. There will be time enough for destruction later.
He glanced at his board, looking back out the viewport.
Speaking of Imperial power, any news on our ship hunt?
We've had 5 more capital ships turned into various Imperial bases in the past 10 hours,
Pelion told him.
Nothing larger than an old star galleon, but it's a start.
We're going to need more than just a start, Captain, Thrawn said, craning his neck slightly to watch the returning TIE interceptors. Any word on Talon Karrn?
Nothing since that tip from Rishi,
Pellion told him, tapping the proper log for an update.
The bounty hunter who sent it was killed shortly afterward.
Keep up the pressure, Thrawn ordered. Karrn knows a great deal about what happens in this galaxy. If there are any capital ships lying unused out there, he'll know where they are. Personally, Pellion thought it pretty unlikely that a mere smuggler, even one with Karrn's connections, would have better information sources than the vast Imperial Intelligence Network. But he'd also dismissed the possibility that Karrn might be hiding Luke Skywalker out at that base on Merkur. Karrn was turning out to be full of surprises.
There are a lot of people out there hunting for him,
he told the Grand Admiral.
Sooner or later, one of them will find him.
Good. Thrawn glanced around the bridge.
In the meantime, all units will continue their assigned harassment of the Rebellion.
His glowing red eyes bored into Pellion's face.
And they will continue, too, to maintain a watch for the Millennium Falcon and the Lady Luck. After the Nogri have been properly primed for their task, I want their prey to be ready for them.
Sabaoth awakened suddenly, his black-edged dreams giving way to the sudden realization that someone was approaching. For a moment he lay there in the darkness, his long white beard scratching gently against his chest as he breathed, his mind reaching out through the Force to track along the road from the High Castle to the cluster of villages at the base of the Rim Mountains. It was hard to concentrate, so very hard. But with a perverse grimness, he ignored the fatigue-driven pain and kept at it. There. No. There. A lone man riding a Kration Thumper, laboring over one of the steeper sections of the roadway. Most likely a messenger, come to bring him some news from the villagers below. Something trifling, no doubt, but something that they felt their new master should know. Master. The word echoed through Sabaoth's mind, sparking a wind-blown tangle of thoughts and feelings. The Imperials who pleaded for him to help them fight their battles, they called him Master too. So would the people of Wayland, whose lives he had been content to rule before Grand Admiral Thrawn and his promise of Jedi followers had lured him away. The people of Wayland had meant it. The people here on Jomark weren't quite sure yet whether they did or not. The Imperials didn't mean it at all. Sabaoth felt his lip twist in disgust. No, they most certainly did not. They made him fight their battles for them, drove him by their disbelief to do things he hadn't attempted for years and years. And then, when he'd succeeded in doing the impossible, they still held tightly to their private contempt for him, hiding it behind those Isl-Mari creatures and the strange empty spaces they somehow created in the Force. But he knew. He'd seen the sideways looks among the officers, and the brief but muttered discussions between them. He'd felt the edginess of the crew, submitting by Imperial order to his influence on their combat skills, but clearly disliking the very thought of it. And he'd watched Captain Aben sit there in his command chair on the Bellicose, shouting and blaspheming at him, even while calling him Master. Spitting anger and impotent rage, as Sabaoth calmly inflicted his punishment on the rebel ship that had dared to strike at his ship. The messenger below was approaching the High Castle gate now. Reaching out with the Force to call his robe to him, Sabaoth got out of bed, feeling a brief rush of vertigo as he stood erect. Yes, it had been difficult. That business of taking command of the Bellicose's turbolaser crews for the few seconds it had required to annihilate that rebel ship. It had gone beyond any previous stretch of concentration and control, and the mental aches he was feeling now were the payment for that stretch. He tightened the robe sash around him, thinking back. Yes, it had been hard.
and yet at the same time it had also been strangely exhilarating. On Wayland, he had personally commanded a whole city-state, one with a larger population than that which nestled beneath the high castle. But there, he'd long since gone beyond the need to impose his will by force. The humans and Saturns had submitted to his authority early on. Even the Minorishi, with their lingering resentment of his rule, had learned to obey his orders without question. The Imperials, as well as the people of Jomark, were going to have to learn that same lesson. Back when Grand Admiral Thrawn had first goaded Sabaoth into his alliance, he'd implied that Sabaoth had been too long without a real challenge. Perhaps the Grand Admiral had also secretly thought that this challenge of running the Empire's war would prove too much for a single Jedi Master to handle. Sabaoth smiled tightly in the darkness. If that was what the glowing-eyed Grand Admiral thought, he was going to be in for a surprise. Because when Luke Skywalker finally got here, Sabaoth would face perhaps the most subtle challenge of his life: to bend and twist another Jedi to his will, without the other even being aware of what was happening to him. And when he'd succeeded, there would be two of them. And who could tell what might be possible then? The messenger had dismounted from his thumper and was standing beside the gate now. His sense, that of a man prepared to wait the convenience of his master, no matter how long that wait might be. That was good. Exactly the proper attitude. Giving his robe sash one final tug, Sabaoth headed through the maze of darkened rooms toward the door to hear what his new subjects wished to tell him.